Hello, hello, all you, all my oddballs here.
Are we gonna actually cut this out? Editor, cut this out.
I am the editor.
Exactly. So, editor, but this is a note for you when you're listening to it.
Okay.
Editor, cut this out. Hello to all of our Fruity Fruitsters, our number one fans, our key lime pies, et cetera, et cetera.
Fruit snacks.
This is Liam here.
Stupid. Chase, welcome to episode 37 of Two Servings of Fruit.
That's right. We're up in here.
I was sorry. I was just thinking that means our last episode would be 38, which is a weird number.
It's okay. It's like TV series have seasons that go to like 22 or 6.
That's fair. But those TV series suck.
I'm the suck.
Yeah. I think TV shows that have over 20 episodes is too much.
Thing in the past. They used to do that often.
Yeah, like Friends had like 24 every season.
Yeah, and like Lost. I remember when I binge watched Lost and it was like 6 seasons and I was like, Jesus Christ, each season was like 20 fucking episodes.
You actually don't need that much to happen in one season of a show.
Well, nothing fucking did. They would. The first season, they finally got into that goddamn vault. And I was like, oh my God.
Still lost. The end of every season of Lost was, still lost.
But it was with a twist.
Lost? But in more danger.
But in a colony.
do you want to talk about Housewives now? Segway? Season finale? Season running times? Beverly Hills.
Woo! I'm a bird! Yeah, let's do it.
So Real Housewives of Beverly Hills had their end of their four-part reunion, longest reunion in Bravo history.
What? No, that's not true.
Yes, it is.
Four parts.
No, there weren't.
Yes, Atlanta.
Oh, when?
When Phaedra got fired.
Why don't this is still the longest. This is still the longest in history. It just shares the title. Was there a five part?
No. Why don't we give the listeners a quick little RD rundown of the largest drama of the season, which is Erica Girardi.
Okay, take it away then.
So for those of you who don't know, the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, they're a cast of women, you know, friends most of the time, lots of drama still. You know how it is, Real Housewives. Anyways, Erica Girardi is one of these women. Also, Erica Jane is another name she goes by because she's a performer. She was married to a very wealthy lawyer, very wealthy. He was actually the lawyer from Erin Brockovich. He wasn't Erin Brockovich, but he assisted her. And
Julia Roberts. Mm-hmm, he is mm-hmm. Julia Roberts.
He's her. Erica Girardi and this man, Tom Girardi, were married for 20 years. They get a divorce. A couple months after they get a divorce, all of this information comes out, all of these lawsuits against Tom Girardi, basically saying that he defrauded and stole money from orphans, victims of airplane crashes. Essentially what had been alleged is that he was their defense lawyer. After reaching settlements, he would not give these people their settlements and he would lie to them and say, oh yeah, the money's coming, when he would be moving it around, spending it, et cetera, et cetera. Of course, because the subject of the show is Erica, she has been not implicated in a legal sense, but implicated in the court of public opinion, if you know what I mean. And as such, she is feeling the need to answer for all of her husband's wrongdoings.
Yeah.
Which has been the bulk of the subject matter.
But has she not been implicated in a legal sense at all? Isn't her name on some things?
I think she's being sued individually, but I believe the suits are mostly against Tom, and because they believe that she has the money that Tom would have, she is also being sued by people, even though I don't know if they're standing for those suits. Like, I don't know if they're going to court. The one with Tom, that's going to court.
Yeah.
So she will be involved in these lawsuits because I'm sure she's going to be called to testify and, you know, she'll be subpoenaed for documents and whatnot.
So the bulk of the season has been Erica kind of the women. What's the word? The women kind of like hypothesizing about Erica's involvement. Speculating is a much easier word. I should have chose.
They're hypothesizing. They're fucking running past. They're actually in the lab right now.
I couldn't think of the word. Anyways, the women speculating about what Erica knows, and then Erica kind of vaguely explaining, revealing certain details about like Tom's competency and events that took place, which. The way it was presented on the show, the way it came across, I will say, not the most believable presentation of events. Like the clip where she's like, like Tom confronted a burglar, and then my son went to check on him, and then on his way home, he rolled his car fucking 12 times because of the snow. Like, just the way she like blurts out all of this extreme stuff. I understand why a lot of people don't believe her. Personally, I support Erica.
Personally, I believe her.
But anyways.
I'm convinced.
What did you think? I know we have touched on this before, but what did you think about the end of, specifically the end of the reunion or the reunion as a whole?
So essentially the way these Bravo reunions always work is they save the best piece for last. So this last episode of the reunion, as it was four parts, which is honestly, the more I think about it, having a reunion and then making it three episodes long is no longer reunion. It's just like an extra addition to the show. Like, it's not a season finale.
I hate if a reunion
following it.
I hate if a reunion is less than three episodes because there's always so much to talk about.
I love the reunion. Don't get me wrong. It's just silly to call it like end, like to call the episode before the reunion the season finale.
It's just it's like a special. It's separate. It's so many months later. People have interacted off the show. Like it's separate.
If they do it with every franchise every year, three parts.
Well, they didn't with New York. They didn't with New York this year. They cut off the New York reunion
because people just did not give a shit.
I gave a shit.
Anyways, yeah, so they saved the best piece of nuggets for last. I was gonna say like
the best piece of nuggets.
Yeah, it didn't really make sense. And the whole last episode was basically Andy Cohen is a prosecutorial attorney, and the thing with Andy Cohen is he will just say, he'll just be holding a card and he'll be saying, oh, Teresa from Minnesota says, you're a fat bitch. And he's like, I didn't say it. Teresa said it. I'm just telling you what Teresa said. And I just chose to pick what Teresa said.
One of my favorite parts about the reunion was, when he said, like, Melinda from Wisconsin said, Kyle, you're a kiss ass. Dorit, you're duplicitous.
That's what made me think of that. He's like, Crystal, you're quiet. Kyle, you're a kiss ass. Dorit, you're duplicitous. What do you guys think?
And all of them were like, what?
Right? For real.
So funny. But he was intense. I do appreciate that he asked Erica the hard questions, because I feel like sometimes he dances around like the real, like holding castmates accountable. But he asked, like the whole fourth part was all about Erica. Basically,
yeah, it was a lot for her to go through too. I'm sure that was just very draining.
Yeah, so what did you think of her responses?
She was literally deposed. Like, that was a deposition.
Yeah, what did you think of her responses?
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, I totally get it. I feel like I can empathize, as I've been there, you know. I feel like I can understand where she's coming from, because it's like she's a guarded person and she's in a really vulnerable situation. And as we've seen over the years with this woman, she's not ever super vulnerable. So it's like a very uncomfortable and weird place for her to be in, to be like very publicly in a shitty situation. So I think her reactions are kind of like, I understand, you know, she doesn't feel like she can be angry. And she also doesn't feel like she's being angry enough for people, which is something that was brought up a lot, or like upset enough, or like, she's too calm and then she's too happy. And, you know, I get it. I feel like in any way you slice it, she's going to be called out for something else, because there's just people who have so many questions about so many different reaching things. And all of those questions are happening all at once. So it's like, oh, well, why aren't you more concerned about the victims? Why aren't you more upset with your husband? Why, you know, like, yeah, blah, blah, blah. And then at the same time, she's also trying to navigate what she doesn't, if she really doesn't know anything, which I think she doesn't, that she's also trying to navigate how much of this is, like, she has to be concerned about, you know, like, how much of this,
yeah,
real, like, what, you know, if she can't trust him and their life together, then, like, what can she trust? Everything's being brought into question for her.
I think that what people and, like, viewers and the castmates forget, and I'm glad that it was brought up in the reunion, is that, like, she is talking to lawyers at the same time as she's filming this stuff, right? Like, when she, because remember she said about the car flipping or him being unconscious, yeah, I can't remember what it was, and then, like, the next time she talked about it, she added in allegedly, which made all the fans on Twitter be like, and even Kyle in her confessional were like, well, you're the one who told us, like, why are you saying allegedly now? And she's like, that's what my lawyers told me to say. Like, she's taking legal advice, like, she has to, and there's certain things that she can't discuss in full detail, and there's certain things I'm sure that she did discuss and then went and told her lawyers and they were like, why the fuck did you say that? And so then she has to try to, like, backtrack, you know what I mean? Like, it's not her being, like, deceitful. It's her taking legal advice, which I think everyone kind of forgot this season.
I think she's in a just a not ideal situation. I have heard she's not planning on leaving the show, so season 12,
it's her only income.
I mean, it's not bad money. I'm sure she's making like $1 million a season.
Well, when Andy was like, I know what I'm paying you, and it ain't bad. And then 20 minutes later, he was like, how are you paying for this lifestyle?
Right? It's like, well, what are you?
And I'm glad she said, you just said you're paying me well, bitch.
I'm sure it's that. And also, she probably still has some, I don't know if she has any brand deals or gets to.
She really let everyone have it this reunion, including Andy Cohen, and I really appreciated that.
I appreciated it because I also feel like she still holds no ill will. Like, you know, like, some people walk out of a reunion and you can tell they kind of got into it a little bit with Andy Cohen and they're like bitter at him, you know?
No, and I don't even think Andy Cohen has ill will towards Erica either. Like, I think he's probably super appreciative that she showed up to the reunion, which is more than lots of people can say. That's true. And answered the questions, even if her answers were like biting and she got mad or whatever, like, she answered the fucking questions, and I think we should all respect her.
I agree. Anyways, that's that on Bravo Housewives. Now time for Weird Shit of the Week.
Weird Shit of the Week.
Jingle.
It's the weirdest shit that you've ever seen. Welcome to Weird Shit of the Week, the week.
Cheeseburger, what is your weird shit?
My weird shit is cool. It's from Huffington Post.
And Ariana.
Anyways, the headline is, what the fuck are you doing?
I'm just drinking some coffee.
Why do you have to drink things so audibly?
I don't know. What's the problem, Chase?
Anyway, the headline is, court rules Pablo Escobar's cocaine hippos are legally people.
Oh, I've heard about this.
More than 80 hippos in Colombia are the first non-human creatures to be literally considered people by a U.S. court. So they were 80 hippos previously owned by Colombian drug lord Pablo Escobar, blah, 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 blah. He used them, I think, to what's the word? Why can't I think of any drugs. Words today? Traffic yeah, drugs. To smuggle cocaine, okay? Anyways, they're legally considered people.
I think because you can charge someone for probably compelling someone to traffic drugs, and you can increase the charges for them. So
okay, wait, listen. They can charge okay, Paulo. Listen to this quote. Dead? I didn't watch the Netflix special. You know, documentary. Special.
It was documentary. Actually, like, no, they had a show about him, didn't they? Narcos?
Yeah, Narcos. It was a documentary. That's, anyways.
That was not a special. That was a fucking like multi-season series. Anyways.
So it was a documentary. Anyways.
No.
The district court. Okay. I don't know what that sentence was. I'm going to edit that out. This is really poorly written. There's a quote from an attorney, and he said, it's obvious that animals actually do have legal rights, the right to not be cruelly abused or killed.
See, the implications for this case, because I've heard about this, is like very big for animal rights activists.
I know. Well, that's what I'm seeing. That's what I was trying to get at with this quote. Like, if I understand that not everyone is stuffing hippos full of cocaine, but like, well, obviously we're
stuffing them full of my cock.
Ew. Ew. Speaking of cocks, roosters are mistreated and chickens as well.
Pigs, cows, you know, the factory farming system we have right now is certainly not sustainable for the planet nor for the well-being of those animals. So
it is. Yeah, so does this mean, oh yeah,
I don't know,
the court order has been recognized as a critical milestone in the broader animal status fight to recognize that animals have enforceable rights.
I think that's a good thing. I think,
oh absolutely,
I think eating meat can be ethical. I just don't know if it's ethical right now, but it's also like very difficult to not, you know what I mean? So
I know, like, factory farming needs to change. We all know that. Mm-hmm. That's not even the conversation I wanted to even get into with this article. I just thought it was crazy that these hippos were stuffed with cocaine and now they're legally people.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're here.
They're big enough that you could fit so much cocaine in them too. So that's the nice part.
We're here and I support animal rights.
Thank you, Chase. That was so brave of Chase, everyone.
Yes, thank you.
Mine's also about animals. Mine's a little more fun, though. Bear breaks into unlocked car in Colorado, poops in the backseat.
What fucking news source is this from?
Oopie, UPI.
Oopie. Oopie. Okay, yeah. Tell us the story.
So in Colorado, police said that a bear broke into an unlocked car and left behind a trash interior and a, quote, extra special surprise in the back seat. This was in Aspen. Beautiful area. I've never been, but it looks beautiful. Yeah, the department said the incident should serve as a reminder to be bear aware and keep cars, homes, and trash secured from animals. It's actually a really short article. I just thought it was almost funny because it's like, so a bear shit in someone's car and there's a reporter and they're like getting quotes from the cop and they're like, this is my fucking job. I went to school. I wanted to be a legitimate journalist and I'm out here. My name is Ben Hooper. His name is Ben Hooper and he's in Colorado talking to cops about bear shit.
So. But I feel like that's most of these weird shit stories. Like,
yeah.
Could you imagine being assigned half of these as a journalist?
I mean, some of them, I am like, when you did the one about the guy who pooped in the grocery store and the woman picked up the poo, that was like, at least, you know, probably has never happened before. You know, I think that exact situation had probably never happened before. A bear breaking into someone's car and leaving a dump, I'm sure that happens all the time.
I still don't think it would be nice as a journalist to be handed the story of someone shitting in the grocery store and then going to the grocery store and saying, hey, where did the guy actually shit exactly? Like,
it would have been compelling if you could have done some investigative journalism, found out who it was, found out it was the city's mayor, and then
yeah,
contact the mayor's office for comment, have him get caught red-handed, or should I say brown-handed. And yeah,
we did that investigative journalism. It was the mayor of Minneapolis.
Is that where that happened, Minneapolis?
No idea.
It was probably still the fucking mayor of Minneapolis.
Yeah.
He just got reelected, actually.
I don't know who he is.
George Frey. Anyways, that was weird shit.
Awesome. That was really cool.
Now we should announce an extra special surprise that we have coming up later in the episode here.
It's going to be on the title, actually.
Well, people might not know if they don't read titles. They can't read.
Oh, true.
Yeah.
We
have a guest.
Very special guest. Do a drum roll.
Popular guest. Popular, you could call her.
Do a drum roll.
What, Chase?
Peppermint is joining us.
Feeling thankful, feeling grateful, feeling Peppermint, my Momo challenge is coming from true.
Drag Race season 9 and also countless other projects like Pose. She did that Broadway show. She has her new Call Me Mother show on OutTV. She has her short film coming out. Peppermint is booked and busy after Drag Race. Yeah, Drag Race shouldn't even be mentioned first anymore. I don't know why we mentioned it first. It should be anything else.
Anything and everything. Yeah, she was super sweet. So that's coming up at the top of the hour here.
Top of the hour.
Top of the morning to you, sailor.
What are we going to talk about now?
What was the first? How was your Halloween?
I'm not going to talk about how my Halloween was after we've introduced Peppermint. Is going to be on the show. Like, we have Peppermint on the show today. That's coming right up. But before then, how was your Halloween? Like, sorry.
Well, mine was really good. So, take that. Yeah, well, I guess we could just go right into the interview then.
Yeah, I feel like we could.
1 hour later. That's like the SpongeBob thing. 1 hour later.
Okay, we're going to go into our interview with Peppermint. Our guest today was a contestant on season 9 of RuPaul's Drag Race, where she finished in second place and has since gone on to star in Pose on FX. She had a Broadway show, Head Over Heels, and she has a new drag competition series called Call Me Mother on OutTV.
That's right.
That season 1 is airing. Season 1 is airing. Check it out.
Please welcome to the show, Peppermint.
Hello.
Hello. How are you? This is so exciting.
Fabulous. Yes.
Well, happy Tuesday afternoon for you, actually. I was going to say happy Tuesday morning.
Yeah. What time is it for you right now?
10 a.m.
10 a.m.?
Oh, okay. Work. Are you in L.A.?
We're in Vancouver.
Okay.
Yeah.
L.A. of the North, as they call it.
Who's they? I don't know how many people say that.
Just me. It's actually just me. Yeah, so we have Peppermint with us today. The lovely, the beautiful, the queen herself.
Hello.
First, I'd just love to know, what was your kind of introduction to drag? How did you find it and what brought you into it?
My first time ever doing drag, I would say, is probably when I dressed up as Violet Beauregard, the girl who turns into a blueberry on Willy Wonka's, from the Willy Wonka story. And that was, my grandmother helped me make the costume, and I was obsessed with, maybe there's something I was obsessed with, like this transformation. I don't really know. Obviously, that's not like a drag character at all. But, you know, I just love the fact that she was like this really disobedient girl who was very independent and wanted to chew her chewing gum and then pay the price by turning into a blueberry. So I used to get dressed up as Violet and roll around on the carpet, you know, because she gets so big she turns into a ball. Yeah. And they push her out the door. And so I was just obsessed with like reenacting that over and over again by myself. But the first time I ever like sort of did it publicly, we had a high school contest called the Homely Court, where everyone would cross dress. And I was a cheerleader. I was captain of the cheerleading squad. Thank you very much. And I would, but I had access to the drama, you know, classes, costume closet. And so I went in there and found the best, worst drag I could find. And it was still better than all the other girls, darling. So I won.
You're born ready.
Darling.
How would you say that drag kind of led you to realizing your trans identity?
Oh, that drag really, like, you know, said, hello, there's something I have to tell you. It was more that drag was the answer that I was looking for, you know, because I had all these feelings that were sort of bottled up and I was getting hints. I guess when the feelings would start to bubble up via different expressions, maybe a hand gesture, maybe me saying something a little too sassy or just being too swishy and too femme and me getting chastised for it, I realized quickly, like all children do, what people deemed appropriate and what they thought was inappropriate. And so I guess I was spending so much energy trying to like curtail that and suppress it. And then eventually I was just too tired to do all that stuff. And so I was looking for an outlet, something that would allow me to express myself the way that I wanted to without being chastised. And obviously that took a long time, and it wasn't until I was almost an adult when I found drag and, you know, discovered what it was. But once I did, you know, of course it was like the, it was like all the guard, you know, you're being policed by gender. So people are acting like they're the guards of gender. People are policing your gender. So they're in the hallway policing your gender, but drag is like, girl, there's another secret passage this way. So I went the other way and no one was even guarding it. So I felt great.
That's great. That's such a fun way to put it. I do love that metaphor.
So coming on to Drag Race, and I think we'll try to keep our Drag Race chat brief, but coming into Drag Race, you were the first out trans contestant going into the show. I just wanted to know how you felt going in.
It was tough. You know, I mean, there wasn't really a welcoming committee. There wasn't like a trans, like, you know, association. There wasn't like a trans concierge. You know, and so there really wasn't any of that. You know, obviously I was able to see, you know, other trans women on the show having really important conversations, both before, like both during their seasons and then obviously after. People like Sonique, people like, you know, Monica Beverly Hills, and so many more, Jiggly Caliente, who, you know, were women like me who did drag and existed as trans women and worked in the context of drag for years. But the connection to their transness in the show wasn't as celebrated, wasn't as uplifted. And so that's all I really had. You know, the most, you know, Sonique mentioned, you know, came out as trans, came out to the other people on the show during the reunion, which was a very emotional moment. Monica Beverly Hills had also had a very emotional moment, but, you know, and then she unfortunately got eliminated. And so I just didn't want to have that sort of sadness around my discussion about me being around my trans identity. I wanted it to be matter of fact. I think it's important that I talked about it, but I wanted to just kind of drop it and go like, this is what it is. This is who I am. And what? Let's go. And I wanted that to be out of the way, because otherwise I'd be carrying it around with me and constantly thinking about it. And so that was kind of, I sort of had all this anxiety. I knew that until leading up to the show. And then of course, being on the show, I was sort of always waiting for that moment and carrying this anxiety. Once I was able to do it and talk about it and realize that everyone else was very supportive, and certainly all the other contestants were very supportive, then, you know, I felt free. And then I was able to kind of do the business of drag, which is what I was there to do. And
did you have any inkling while you were on the show that it would have precipitated such like a, it was a bit of a watershed moment, I think, for the franchise, because it was at a point where Drag Race was getting so big and, you know, queens coming off the show were getting such massive followings. Did you ever have any thoughts like, I wonder how this is going to, if they're going to use this footage even, or like, I wonder how this is going to end up playing with the audience as a whole?
I mean, I was hopeful that everything would just sort of be presented, you know, realistically and honestly. And I think it was, you know, I, of course, there's two different pieces to like relating to in terms of reaction when it comes to my experience and coming out on the show. And the first part is, you know, what's the reaction from the other contestants going to be? Are they going to, you know, are they going to say anything negative? Are they going to be accepting? Who knows? And that's really what I was focused on. I was like, if I can just, you know, introduce myself to these people that I don't know and let them know what's up, can we just proceed with the game? And so that's really what I was focused on. But then of course there is the whole after the show, moment, the reaction online on social media. And some of that was different. It kind of came out of nowhere and was unexpected. You know, there were people, you know, who I was hearing them say, well, you know, trans women don't really belong in the show because it's not fair. You know, it's an advantage. and then of course there were also trans people and queer people in the community who were saying I wasn't a convincing enough representation of a trans woman, that, you know, because I hadn't had certain surgeries, that I wasn't believable enough as a woman, so I wasn't. There's certainly one person who definitely said that, quite on record. And so, you know, that was upsetting to me. I wasn't prepared for that. I was really hoping that, you know, I was foolishly hoping, you know, optimistic, hoping that my own personal story being opened up, I'm opening up my life and myself and handing it over to the Drag Race fans and to Drag Race in general, that I was hoping that it would have been so certain folks would be more gentle with that. But I learned, you know.
Yeah.
Wow. Jeez. I did not know that.
Do you feel like the show has evolved enough with the contestants that they're willing to bring on? Do you think that contestants like Gottmik or like Kylie coming back and winning the whole damn thing, or even Victoria Scone on UK, like, do you think that Drag Race is evolving at an okay rate, or do you think they should be doing more?
I mean, I think they're evolving at the rate that they're going to evolve at. Yeah. I certainly think that, you know, every show should be more as inclusive as possible and aim to do more and do better sort of constantly. I guess when we don't ask those questions, we come up with the answer, you know, when you ask, are you going to be more inclusive? Then if we're not asking those questions of ourselves, I guess then the answer to that question is I've done enough. But then that just kind of means I'm stopping where I am, even though the rest of you all are moving forward. And so I think all shows should, you know, we certainly are not at a point at which all of Hollywood and all of entertainment is up to date and Drag Race is behind. We're not. That's not where we are. And so everyone's got some improving to do.
One more about the show. Would you ever, in a hypothetical situation, ever go back?
Hypothetically, if the timing were right and if the if everything were right, then of course I would. There's a, you know, everything needs to be right.
Yeah. So I want to talk about Call Me Mother on OutTV, and I want to talk about
Call Me Mother.
How were you approached for the project? How did it come about?
I was asked by the network if I was interested in doing a drag reality show, and I said no. And that was that. And then we came back and had more conversations. And, you know, I didn't really fully get it, but it was explained. The way that it was explained to me was that they were aiming to have a drag competition show that was more competitive. A drag competition show that was more inclusive and opened up and had featured different types of drag artists. And obviously that was very appealing to me. And so that kind of perked up my ears. And then I heard a little bit more about it. I really was on the fence, but I'm happy that I did it because, you know, I think it's a really great offering. You know, drag is really popular and I can't really, I hope, I can't picture a time when it won't be popular, and I hope I never see it. But in the meantime, it deserves as many platforms as possible, I think. And having another show that showcase and more shows that showcase more people, then maybe we won't put so much pressure on shows like Drag Race, you know?
Mm-hmm. And you're showcasing our Canadian queens, right? It's all Canadian queens.
I mean, it is. It's all Canadian kings, queens, and non-binary drag entertainers. And they are Canadian. And it's fantastic. It's wonderful. It was great to go to Canada and be able to live there for a while and get to know everybody on the show. And I think it's wonderful, you know. I mean, a lot of these are drag entertainers that I don't know if they didn't or hadn't or didn't want to or didn't, whatever. I'm not sure what their relation their relationship is to Drag Race Canada. But these are people who obviously weren't on Drag Race Canada. And we still see that there's so many, there's a rich offering of drag entertainment in the country outside of one show or another.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Don't sleep on, like I said, LA of the North.
No. Okay. Well, we're still thinking about it.
I was just going to ask, you know, now that you've spent a little bit of time or some extensive time in Canada and with some Canadian people, who's nicer, who's better, Canadians or Americans?
What? Who's better, Canadians or Americans? Canadian Americans.
Oh,
there you go.
Got the diplomatic answer.
So specifically Ryan Reynolds. I'm also curious, being in, you know, the series premiere, the first season of the show, how does it feel to be, you know, kind of like a leader on it and a co-host and really the face of it as it's going into being with the public?
I mean, it feels wonderful. I don't know any other way to say it. It feels great. I'm proud of the work that I did and my contribution to the show. And it feels good to have my name attached to it. I mean, I guess it would feel weird if I weren't on the show, but my name were attached to it somehow. Yeah. And so, you know, I did the work. I want people to see it. And I feel proud about it. I'm happy that we were able to film the show. I'm happy that we were able to do it during the pandemic, which is obviously, it's a serious topic, but it was obviously, you know, even months ago, it was, you know, Ontario had just gone into another lockdown when we were filming, like literally that same time. And so, you know, I think it was like the first day of shoot, like the first day of filming was like the last day any of us would be able to get into the country because of the lockdown. And so, and there was, you know, so obviously things were closed and it was difficult and we were doing our best. So in light of all of that, I feel wonderful about it. And, you know, I wasn't sure if I'd ever want to be a judge on a reality TV show. It beats being a contestant, I'll tell you that. In terms of all of this, all the pressure and the,
yeah,
and the uncertainty and the sort of feeling like fate's in someone else's hands, in terms of all of those things, being a judge,
yeah,
is great.
Yeah.
What are you most excited for people to see as season one continues to air?
I'm excited for people to see how these drag entertainers perform under pressure in these situations. And I'm excited for people to see the family element. Obviously the drag competition, you know, piece is there. And, people will hopefully will be interested in that, but even more so the sort of family element of it, which is unique, which is, you know,
yeah,
different in terms of, you know, when we're talking about drag TV and drag, you know, competitions and different things, that sort of family element isn't quite as prevalent. And so, you know, hopefully people will take that away and get a warm feeling.
Yeah, for sure.
I love that. That sounds so sweet. I also hear you have a short film coming out soon. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
It's true. Also airing on Out TV is my short film, A Girl Like Me, which is based on my album, A Girl Like Me, Letters to My Lovers. And it's a story about a relationship, just a relationship. I had a very wonderful relationship that ended in flames. You know, there's nothing that remarkable about it. What's remarkable about it is that it's a Black trans woman singing about her experience in love and life. And it's out in the world, out in mainstream for people to see. And I filmed a short film because we created a lot of this work during the pandemic, which made it really difficult to do like music videos and traveling back and forth. Obviously we were limited. And so we decided to just stay in one place, bring everybody to us once and just film a short film that's based on the album. And so the music, the songs on my album score the film. And so it's kind of like a musical. And it's just like one long, I guess people would call it a visual album, but it's more narrative than a visual album, because a visual album is really, I think, if we're learning from Beyonce, really just a collection of music videos that are, yeah, all tied together. This is, you know, a narrative and has its own sort of story that is supported by the music. And it airs on Out TV on the 3rd for everyone to see, and Fruit TV for everyone to see on the 3rd. And then it's available for streaming for everyone in the world. I'm sorry, it airs today. It airs on the 2nd on Out TV. It airs on the 2nd on Out TV, and then it'll be available for everyone internationally to stream on Out TV, and then of course Fruit TV in the UK on the next day.
Oh my God, wonderful. I am so excited. That sounds right up my alley.
Yes. And there's a hot, very hot, sexy man who's the co-star. His name is Levi Smith, and he is, he happens to be a porn actor.
Oh.
Oh, okay.
And you get to see me rolling around naked with him.
Oh. More incentive, even more incentive to tune in.
That's all we have for today. It was an absolute pleasure and just a dream to get to know you a little more and know about your story and all the work that you're doing right now.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thank you for talking with me.
And we hope you get to come to the LA of the North soon.
I was actually there filming Schmigadoon. Hopefully I'll be able to come back again for season two if they announce a season two. I was in Vancouver for an entire month last year, exactly a year ago, you know, and it was great. So I can't wait to visit again.
Okay, well, thank you so much for chatting with us. Could you just let people know where to find you, where to find more about your projects?
Yeah, they can just go to my social medias, which is Peppermint247 everywhere on all platforms. And, you know, look for what I'm talking about.
Perfect. Perfect. Easy, consistent. We love it.
Love it.
Okay, well, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Well, thank you so much. All right, bye, everybody.
That was awesome.
It's just become a running joke now that you say that after an interview. So, yeah, that was nice. It was lovely to speak to Peppermint. I'm glad that she found time in her busy, busy schedule, because she is actually probably one of the like busier Rue girls for sure. So,
yeah, she'd be.
And I am excited to watch Call Me Mother. So, Canadian production, Canadian performers, come on. I'm into it. She's and so someone, sweet. Someone in Peppermint's house on the show is from Vancouver.
Oop. It's Chase.
It's me. Just kidding. No, it's not me.
Shall we do our song of the week?
Well, I think we should let people know first.
Oh, yeah.
Before song of the week, because I know that some people tune out before song of the week. Next week.
So everyone's aware.
Do like an alarm sound effect. Or I meant more like a sporting event type of like. Yeah, like that. Okay. Yeah.
Relay those.
Next week will be the final episode of season one of Two Serves of Fruit.
That's right. Season one finale, and then a 3-part reunion.
4-part.
4-part reunion, then we go immediately back into filming.
No, hosted by Annie Cohen and Nicki Minaj.
Oh, that's so true. I forgot about that. That's
yeah.
So awesome.
Yeah, so next week is our season finale, and we're going to reminisce and cry and laugh and clench our fists in fury. So don't miss it.
Don't miss it. You don't want to miss it for the world. Get your tickets.
Tickets are $50. Everyone. $50, you can e-transfer me.
$50 UK, so whatever the
$50 UK. Anyways, time for song of the week. Do you have one ready?
Yeah.
I don't, so you go first.
Oh my God. I've been feeling kind of into like a little punk rock moment. So mine is Dirty Little Secret by the All American Rejects.
Yeah.
I'll keep you my dirty little secret. Dirty little secret. Don't tell anyone or you'll be just another reject.
Okay, cool. My song is You Know I'm No Good by Amy Winehouse, because Back to Black, my favorite album of all time, just turned 15 last week. 15 years old. Amen. And so I've been listening to it. And that's a great song.
That is a good song. I love her.
Rest in peace.
Rest easy, Jeezy.
Jeezy's dead?
Jeezy's not dead.
Thank God.
Did get Momo challenged. He did get Momo challenged.
No one's going to know what. What?
Everyone knows what the Momo challenge is.
No one's going to know why you're saying Momo challenge.
I don't even know why.
Okay. Well,
I'm Momo challenging myself.
You can find us. You can find us on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok at Two Servings Pod. You can also learn more about us at twoservingspod.com or email us at twoservingspod@gmail.com, even though next week's our season finale, so it's too late to come on the show.
You can still reach out, get set up for next year.
Yeah, for real.
And if you're listening to this and you haven't done the Momo challenge, what the fuck?
That's not your line. That's not your line. That's not your line.
Leave us a rating or review, motherfucker, and fucking get Momo'd. Period.
Perfect. We'll see you next week for the season one finale extravaganza.
Mm-hmm. Bring your raincoat.
Why?
We're going to be getting soaking wet.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
How do I stop this? It won't stop.
It won't stop.
Stop.
We can't stop.